Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
The Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980 and the radio.com app.
Get at least three offers on your home within 72 hours guaranteed, courtesy of our friend John Leahy of RE/MAX Fine Living. Go online to johnsellsdmv.com. That's johnsellsdmv.com. All right, we're going to get into some NFL playoff talk with Mike Jones at 7:40. We had this conversation the other day, and I told you on Monday in my recap of the game that I thought Chase Young was a total non-factor and it was disappointing. And then several of you sent me this video that somebody had sent out showing and explaining to me why Chase Young had such a terrible game. It was because he was held the entire game. Many of you also telling me that he was double-teamed and chipped the entire game. And I went back and I watched the game on the All-22 on Monday night, and I, at least based on my eyes, I didn't see any of that. I didn't see him getting held. I didn't see him getting doubled. I didn't see him getting chipped. I just saw him getting dominated. And then when he had retweeted the video that showed him being held on two different plays and saying, look, Chase Young didn't have a great game, but he damn near got held the entire game. And the fact that he retweeted that video, that turned it into a topic for me on Tuesday, which many of you agreed with and many of you did not. You said he was very good in this game and he was held, and it's okay that he retweeted the excuse that was made on his behalf. And I said, I don't know. I think he's bigger than that. I was hoping that he was bigger than that, that there wouldn't be any excuses for a game that I evaluated as a terrible game for him, as a on pass plays. On all the pass plays, he was a non-factor in a game in which we were expecting him to be a major factor, and we needed him to be. We needed the defense to step up. We needed him to be a big factor. Anyway, Chris Cooley does the film breakdown of these games and has been all year long on my podcast. This was his evaluation of Chase Young's performance against Tampa Bay.
All these mouthy fans pissing you off, Kevin, telling you what Chase Young did in this game, and you don't know anything. Do you think you still know?
Yeah. Yeah, I watched
Before it. I do this, you feel good?
Yeah, I went back and watched it again last night. Now, just to be sure, I went back and watched it again last night. I'm sure. Was I right?
All right. Here's the details from Chase Young, which anybody else can go and determine this was not that hard. Here's what I came up with, all right? Chase Young double-teamed two times as a pass rusher.
Right.
He was doubled a couple times in the run game, but that's very common for a defensive end in a four-down front. Two times in the pass game. There was no plan whatsoever from Tampa Bay to double team Chase Young. None. Nada. Go watch it. You can't find it. Back runs into him and helps once. Another time, he goes down inside Donovan Smith and the guard is there to help. He wasn't planning on a double team pre-snap. He just, the tackle knows if Young goes down hard inside, he's got help. That is not a double team. Twice. 26 singled up rushes. I counted.
Donovan Smith was damn good, wasn't he?
Damn good. He was singled up 26 times. Two, maybe three against a tight end. And then I counted three stunts inside. Once where he's picked up by the center, twice where he's picked up by the guard. They didn't end up being double teams. They were stunts. He dropped into pass protection twice in this game.
Right.
Out of the 26 singled up rushes, I came up with what I would consider three individual wins, none of which resulted in him touching Tom Brady before the ball was thrown. Maybe one impacted Brady's drop, and that was where Brady slid hard left and threw across the field to Evans in the fourth quarter.
Exactly, and that was against Haig when he took the inside path.
Haig is the extra offensive tackle playing tight end, and he knows extended that far, the only way to get there is the inside path, and Haig did a good job hanging with him. He did not beat Haig quick enough to actually impact Tom Brady's drop. Maybe another quarterback, not Brady. Brady slid in the pocket. He made a throw. He had three wins. I counted that as a win.
Yeah.
He had another three out of 26 that I thought were good rushes. He had 18 losses out of 26. And that's not counting the two double teams where one, he did an okay job splitting the tackle and guard. It was a 50-50. So on his 28 total rushes, I saw him as four 50-50, good rush, no win, three win. And those wins, Kev, are not Von Miller change the game wins. So if you want to say he didn't play well, he played fine for a guy. But if you want to say he's a game changer in this game and he was doubled and there was a focus and there was a reason, no, you can't. But I'll go through this game. I'm not going to suggest that he was a bad player for Washington. But what he wasn't in this individual game was a baller.
Non-factor in the game is the way I described it. He was a non-factor.
He was a non-factor for what he is supposed to be.
Well, he wasn't a factor. He didn't sniff Brady. I know he and yes, that is based on the fact that we expected him to sniff Brady. We expected him to make plays. But, you know, just a guy means that you're at least doing something to make others better. He was getting singled the whole time. Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. He got held the entire game. That's right. He got held the entire game.
No.
Explain that to everybody.
There were no holding penalties, in my opinion, against Chase Young in this game.
I thought there was one. On the Vaughn, where they tried to swing the pass to him, I thought he got hooked a little bit coming in. That was it.
Maybe you could – there was no definitive – two refs should throw a penalty flag holdings in this game.
Two refs should throw it.
The overall, what I saw and what I think, and then we'll get to some of the individual stuff. He did not expect that he was going to get jump set. And by that, I mean, instead of the tackle kick sliding to depth, he takes one or maybe two kicks back and then jumps into Young. Surprised him three or four times. Had no plan and didn't end up having an answer for that late. A lot of times you get him once and then all of a sudden he's waiting on that jump set. And as soon as you stop short, he's got that quick outside counter. Didn't have a plan for that. And he never turned a short corner. He actually fell down three or four times trying to run the loop, as they call it, and was pushed down. But, I mean, even you talk about the short set stuff. What's the first play of the game? This is a great job by Donovan.
Yeah.
The first play of the game, Young comes straight into Donovan, and he shucks him down. That's actually sort of a hold.
You know, I was just going to say, the very first play of the game, you really couldn't tell. Certainly,
they'll never call it.
You couldn't tell on the over, on the big view. And then on the end zone view, I looked at it, and I'm like, I don't think that's a hold. I think that he just gets into that position, and I'm remembering the play, and I don't have it in front of me right now, where he sort of goes in head first, and he gets knocked to the ground.
No, here's what happened. And this is a taught technique for offensive linemen. And this is a great opener.
Okay.
For the tackle. You go inside hands and then you yank him downwards. And then you put your, it's like that, almost like a hockey, pull the jersey over their head and push them down move. It's a shuck down. It's taut.
Okay.
It wasn't lucky. He didn't fall into it. It was a definite plan on the first play. Chase Young, you try to bull rush me, I will shuck you down. And because of that, I didn't see any bull rushes the rest of the day. He tried to run the loop and he didn't get there. And he had a couple where he tried to get inside and he didn't get there. Kev, he wasn't held. He wasn't doubled. It's, we're not going to, you, my friend, do not need to debate this anymore.
Yeah, I know. My position was this. He was a total non-factor on pass plays. Total non-factor in pass plays. And this was not because he was held or because he was doubled and chipped and tripled like he was in the Clemson semifinal game a year ago. And that's, to me, that means he did not play well. Because in this game, we needed Chase Young to pressure Tom Brady, and he never did. Except for the one where he made Brady on that inside rush where Brady did a really good job of avoiding it and threw to Evans down to the three-yard line.
You needed Chase Young to be Chase Young, and he was not.
I did, before you get started, finished with him, the one thing when I was looking at it again last night, I thought he looked very small compared to Donovan Smith. It really seemed like a physical mismatch to me, which surprised me. Am I right or wrong about that?
I felt like Donovan Smith seemed overwhelming in terms of size and strength to Chase Young.
Me too. I noticed that.
The other hindsight to this is, you know who Donovan Smith is. You've watched film. You've watched film with speed rushers, with quick twitch guys off the edge. You got to understand he's got a plan for that, and he's got some skill there. What you need to bull rush and put him back into the lap of Tom. The guy to do that would be Montez Sweat. So as they got into the second quarter of this game, and you could see that Chase Young wasn't going to get pressure, switch him.
I know. And they never did they?
Not until very late.
Very late, they tried him on the other side.
Drive, they switched
against
him.
Against
after. Yeah. And that was after Young got hurt.
Right. Exactly. After he
switch
got
him.
Hurt.
Yeah. Because I don't know if Chase understood it, didn't feel like he could push Donovan Smith back into the pocket, but he never tried. He never went with speed to power. And I think the thing that he had to do in watching it again early in this game was really go with speed to direct power. And even if you aren't going to win, you're going to take him right back into Tom. And Kev, but as your two interior guys are bull rushing inside, make him step up with speed to power. Make him step up at 7 yards instead of 9.
You know what's interesting is Del Rio has switched Sweat and Young at times during games this year. And I don't know if it's just to give, you know, so that the tackles don't get used to blocking the same kind of guy, or if it's the defense that they're in. But that was, as I was going through it the first time, I kept waiting for, okay, this isn't working. Maybe he ought to go to the other side. And you're right. It was when he got injured, and then he was up against Wirfs. Now, look, they are a very good pass pro offensive line. They've got two excellent tackles. I mean, this is one of the really good pass pro offensive lines in the league. And, you know, they lost their starting guard during the game, which, by the way, Payne, when he got his sack, was against the backup guard, I'm pretty sure. That was something that I noticed when you were going through it earlier on Payne sack. But they've frustrated a lot of people this year, not New Orleans, but it was, they've got two excellent tackles, period.
I think there's three games where Tom Brady's had been sacked three times. There's maybe another three where he's been sacked twice. He's never, in this season, he's not been sacked more than three times.
Well, and he was sacked three times. Wasn't the sack total three on Saturday night? I think it was. I could be wrong about that. Maybe it was less than that. I mean,
no, it was
Payne had one and Payne had two. Yeah, exactly.
It's the most. I mean, it's tied for the most Brady's been sacked.
Right.
It's just if you're going to go with a lot of four man stuff, in terms of four man rushes,
you better win
on third down situations. Some.
Oh, fuck.
And Chase Young's that guy. I'm not off of Chase Young because of this one game. He'll learn a lot from this game.
Of course.
He really will.
Of course. I'm not
but for wanting Tom, he didn't get any of him.
No. And again, like I would have left it on Monday where I left it, which was he had a disappointing game. He was a non-factor in the game where we needed him to be a big factor. But it was him retweeting the tweet about him being damn near held the whole game. And I just think he's bigger than that. Like, if you have the All-22 and you watch this, you know he wasn't held all damn game. And you know that he wasn't doubled or chipped or anything else all damn game. He just got dominated on pass plays by Donovan Smith.
Period. There's no excuse. Now there could have been adjustments, but there's no excuse to what happened in that game other than he got beat.
He got beat.
Period.
Yep. And you,
now,
Cooley.
Quickly. Yeah. He did some things in the game. Okay. He made some plays in the run game.
Yep.
Okay. There was some stuff that he did well in the run game. There was some stuff he didn't do well in the run game. He got blocked by Gronk a couple times where he was locked out. He got blocked by Donovan Smith where he was locked out a couple times. He wasn't a monster in this game. He didn't change the game. I'm not saying he didn't help his team, but he didn't hurt Tampa. And that's a huge difference.
Yeah.
Period.
You know, I think that these rookie defensive ends as pass rushers, if you look at guys like Mack and Garrett, I pointed this out to you earlier this year, that 3-4 outside linebackers have more of an immediate impact as pass rushers with numbers, with sacks, than 4-3 defensive ends do in their rookie year. I didn't have an answer for you as to why, but I have one right now. I think they just have to mature physically and get stronger. I think he was dominated by a much stronger guy. And Chase Young is really strong. Don't get me wrong. But 2 years from now, that ain't going to happen. There's no way. Because he's got the full arsenal. He's got the speed. He's got lots of moves. I think these 4-3 defensive ends as rookies aren't always as strong as they're going to be 2 years down the road. You look at Garrett and Mack, you know, sort of contemporaries. It took them a couple of years to start producing at a really high level.
Keep in mind, he's still the rookie of the year.
I understand that, and he deserved it.
It's almost like it's big brother strength or grown man strength.
Right.
Chase Young might be as strong as any of these dudes, and he's faster than any of these dudes, but he just hasn't called the old man out. His dad yet. He hasn't adjusted to the pure grown man strength.
Right. Donovan Smith is some grown man strength.
No doubt. No doubt. And I think that's a big part of it is just that adjustment to these guys are really good. They know how to play. You don't win with your first move a lot of times. They adjust to you. They plan for you. Now, obviously, in college, you're planning for guys, but the time spent watching Chase Young by Donovan Smith was five times as much, I promise, than any college tackle watched Chase Young.
Right.
Would you like to see him at this point say, I went back and watched this again, and I got to be better? And I will.
I bet he knows that at this point, don't you? Are you? If you're asking me if I care if he says it,
I don't like for anybody to retweet any form of excuse in general.
I understand that,
but
I don't.
I don't like that. He's young, and I understand it. But there's also this idea that Now, 90% of people are just going to see or believe that he was held or doubled.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, if you want to keep making Pro Bowls and stuff, the optics of it is better if you were held and doubled all game.
Well, Cooley, here's the thing. Okay, I said this to you last week. I didn't have an issue with him calling out Tom because I didn't really view it as him calling out Tom.
No, I didn't either.
It was in the emotion of the moment. But here's the thing, and he's going to learn from it. When you're going into the playoffs, everything gets magnified. Everything you say gets magnified. And when you're going into the playoffs and your opponent is the greatest of all time, and his name's Tom Brady, and whether it was just in the heat of the moment and whether it was really egregious or direct or not, it's going to get blown up, which it did all week long. And you don't need to put that additional pressure on yourself. Because if you do, you're going to have to back it up with a game that people remember. And that was not a game that anybody remembers for anything positive. So I just, look, everybody's different and everybody views these things differently. And I'm open-minded to, hey, you know what, didn't bother me at all. Well, that's fine. And it didn't really bother me at all either, but he needed to walk the walk. Okay, if you're going to create something, even if it wasn't really intended and it wasn't that bad, that's fine. But now it's become a story. So go out there and let everybody know that you wanted Tom, you got Tom. But you didn't get it. You didn't get close to Tom.
You might have wanted Tom, but you didn't want Donovan Smith.
You wanted no. Well, I don't.
No, here's the reason I care zero about what he said. He said it in the moment of a huge division clinching game.
Of course.
Where he is so hyped and there's so much adrenaline. Had he said it on Tuesday or Wednesday, had he went back, watched Donovan Smith and said, we want Tom. We're going to get to Tom. That's different. He said it with adrenaline and emotion.
I agree.
I do not care. And he did. And it wasn't flamboyant. It wasn't outrageous.
No.
We want Tom. He got him. He got him.
What was his grade?
It was a C minus.
So that was Cooley on the Chase Young portion of the film breakdown. He did an entire film breakdown of the defense, which was not very good on Saturday night. And you can hear that on my podcast. TheKevinSheehanShow.com is the easiest way to get it. If you don't get your podcast from Apple Podcasts or Spotify or TuneIn or any of the other places where you can get the podcast as well. He graded out the rest of the defense. I'll just net it out for you. He was obviously disappointed with virtually everybody with one exception, and that being Daron Payne. He said Daron Payne was the monster in the game on Saturday night, everybody else and really was very disappointed in a lot of the coverages. Said that they tried too many coverages and mixing coverages, and the bottom line is you're just not going to fool Brady. And look, they have weapons. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, they weren't playing, they weren't playing a bad. They weren't playing the Bears offense in that playoff game. They were playing a Tampa offense. It was hot coming in. You know, they'd played some bad defensive teams. And keep in mind, Washington had played some very questionable offensively capable teams as they really got it rolling defensively as well. But Tampa, with that weaponry and with that quarterback who's been there, done that, and seen every single coverage you can throw at them, they got torched. There's no other way to describe it. I would urge you to listen to the podcast just to hear Cooley describe the drive at 21-16. That was the drive more than any other that he was just mortified by. There were drives like in that fourth quarter where when they scored to make it 21-16, it's like, all right, we got to get a stop here. Now's the time. We get a big Chase Young play or a big Montez Sweat play. We get off the field. We force a turnover. We get the ball back. We're on a roll. We take the lead. and they didn't get a stop. They gave up a touchdown. Cooley went through that entire drive, the drive that went that made it 28-16, and it's almost worth it just to listen to that. And then when they answered to make it 28-23 with 4:50 to go, got to get a stop. Got to get a stop on this next drive. Get the ball back. The offense is in rhythm. Taylor Heinicke is going to lead us to a win, and they couldn't get off the field again. In the biggest spot of the game, they did ultimately hold them to a field goal on that drive, courtesy of a big second down sack by Daron Payne against a backup guard in the game at that point. But Daron Payne, look, I'm a big fan of Chase Young, and I am a big fan of Daron Payne. Many of you have heard me say this about Payne. I think that he has a chance, like Young, to be a top 3 to 5 player at his position. He is freakishly athletic. Anybody that you talk to out there will tell you, you just cannot believe how athletic Daron Payne is. And you see it on Sundays, and sometimes it's harder to see it with a D tackle. Is he Fletcher Cox? Is he Aaron Donald? Not yet. Does he have a chance to be? I think he's got a chance to be Fletcher Cox. I do. Maybe not Aaron Donald, though. Aaron Donald is a once-in-a-generation D-tackle. Mike Jones from USA Today will join us in about 15 minutes. When we come back, I'm going to go through the quarterback options with respect to Heinicke and Kyle Allen and their status, and also the Alex Smith status as well. We'll have plenty of time to talk about Stafford or Winston or Prescott or Newton. Or drafted quarterbacks. But I want to give you the status of the three that are on the roster right now and what the team needs to do to keep them. It's not as hard as you would think for next year. Kevin Sheehan Show, Team 980, also team980.com, and the radio.com app.
You can listen to the Team 980 on your smart speaker. Just say, play the Team 980.
The Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980 and the radio.com app.
So I wanted to give everybody a quick update on what the quarterback situation really is with respect to the contracts that they have with the quarterbacks on their roster. I know Galdi had our good friend J.I. Halsell on his show yesterday, and I think J.I. helped out with some of that. But before we get to, okay, are they going to draft somebody? Are they going to trade for somebody? Are they going to sign somebody as a free agent? Look at what they have right now, because it's favorable in terms of what they have right now. If you believe that the quarterback of the future or next year's starter or maybe the starter for the next several years is on the roster right now. Because if you believe that, they're in great shape. They're in phenomenal shape. If you don't believe that, they're going to have to spend some money. Now, the good news is, just overall, big picture, Washington will enter 2021 with, more likely than not, the seventh most available space cap-wise. I'm sorry, the fifth most available space cap-wise at $37 million. But there's an easy way to jack that number up and probably move them closer to the top four. A couple of ways to do that. But right now, they are in good position with a salary cap, by the way, that is going to drop from $198 million to $175 million, courtesy of the pandemic. All right, let's go with the quarterbacks on the roster right now that are under contract or can be under contract for next year. Alex Smith. Alex Smith has no further guaranteed money remaining on his deal. However, he does have guaranteed signing bonus money that he's received that hasn't been accounted for on the cap, and that's roughly $10.8 million. If he plays next year, his actual contract would pay him $18.75 million. So basically, if they cut him or if he retired, you're talking about essentially close to, you know, an $8 million cap savings on Alex Smith. All right. If he's not on the roster, you will gain an extra $8 million. You'll have $10.8 million in dead cap, but just call it $18.8 million in base salary that you wouldn't be paying him. So you'd save $8 million bucks, adding $8 million more to your salary cap, without Alex Smith on the roster next year. I'm going to tell you right now, I think this is an absolute lock. I don't think Alex Smith is on the roster. Whether he retires or he's released, I do not think he's on the roster next year. It's not because they're so starving for the $8 million in savings. It's because Alex Smith just can't play 16 games. Now, you could say that about Taylor Heinicke, and you could say that about Kyle Allen as well. And, you know, there's an old saying, if you don't have a quarterback that can remain healthy and upright for a season, you don't have a quarterback. And all three of the quarterbacks, and I'm not counting Steven Montez, I'll give you his situation in a second, are quarterbacks that have proven that they can't stay healthy. That's a problem, and that will be a big consideration, I really believe, going into next year. Taylor Heinicke's situation is simply put, he did not and was not on the active roster for the minimum number of games, which is six, for it to account as an accrued NFL season for contractual purposes. That means Heinicke is what they call an RFA, a restricted free agent. What does the team have the right to do? Well, they have the right to tender him. We've seen this done before with players where they will put a tender on him. And with Heinicke, it's probably a first-round tender or a second-round tender. And basically what that means is that the team has him locked up for a certain amount. On a second-round tender, it's 1 year, $3.3 million, right? Nothing, really, relatively speaking, for a quarterback who might compete for a starting job. Other teams can sign Heinicke and negotiate with Heinicke, but if they reach a deal, Washington can either match that deal or receive a second rounder in return. Now, if they put a first round tender on him, they've got to pay him more. They've got to pay him roughly $4.5 million for 1 year. And same thing, they can match or they can get a first rounder. I don't think teams are going to negotiate with Taylor Heinicke on a big deal to give up a first rounder potentially to Washington. I don't even know if they'll do it for a second rounder. Washington always also has the right of first refusal. So if they turn Heinicke and say, hey, go solicit any offer you want, they could match that deal, and but there would be no draft pick compensation. My guess, and then by the way, if nobody makes an offer, they pay him $2.1 million. My guess is if they want him back, they're going to tender him with that second round tender. They'll pay him $3.3 million for 1 year, and they'll allow him to negotiate and go out and seek another deal, but they'd have the option to match that deal or get a second rounder in return. That would be my guess on Taylor Heinicke. Now, Kyle Allen. Allen's situation is, first of all, and I think Michael Phillips told us this earlier in the week when he said that dislocated ankle may take more time than we thought to rehabilitate in the offseason, and that there's a chance, I think it was Michael Phillips, it could have been JP or Ben Standig, who told us that it's not a lock that he's going to be ready for training camp, which really puts a big question mark on Kyle Allen, doesn't it? Because I think they want him. I think they like him. I think Scott Turner thinks he's a starting quarterback in the NFL. He has what's called an exclusive rights free agent mark on him or tag on him. Meaning, as long as Washington wants him next year, he's got to play for the veteran minimum, which is, I think it's roughly $800,000 somewhere. And then next year he would be in that RFA status, restricted free agent status. But if Washington wants him, they got him for somewhere around $800,000. You know what that means? Regardless of his health right now, he's a lock to be on the roster, an absolute lock. Even if he isn't ready to start the 2021 season, he's going to play in 2021. He's a lock. Montez. Look, whatever his situation is, Montez is not a player in this discussion. So there you go. Basically, you save $8 million if you release Alex Smith or if he retires. I would guess it's one or the other. Taylor Heinicke, I think, will get a second-round tender. They'll pay him $3.3 million for 1 year. And Kyle Allen absolutely comes back on the restricted free agent tag for $800,000, or roughly somewhere in the neighborhood of $800,000, and he's on the roster. And then, in terms of what else Well, there's the trade route, the Matt Stafford route possibly, the free agent route, you know, the Cam Newton, Jameis, not Jameis Winston, Ryan Fitzpatrick possibly route. If you want to throw Deshaun Watson into the trade category, go ahead. If you want to throw Carson Wentz into the trade category, go ahead. We'll have more time to talk about all of those options. But I wanted to give you those options on the three quarterbacks. My guess is Alex Smith is not on this roster. They save $8 million. My guess is that both Heinicke is on there with a second-round tender and that Kyle Allen is on there for the $800,000 a year or whatever it comes out to be on the on his status as the what's the title for him? My fault. On the restricted free agent tag. All right, there you go. Allen, Heinicke, yes, and then we'll talk about, you know, the other path to either a starting quarterback or a younger quarterback with Heinicke and Allen battling it out for the starting job. Mike Jones, USA Today, next.
The only way to stream the Team 980 on your phone or smart speaker is with the Radio.com app. Presented by Regency Furniture. This weekend, shop the 72-hour Red Tag Savings event at Regency Furniture with Red Tag Savings up to 72% off store-wide. Free delivery and no interest financing. The Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980 and the Radio.com app. Here's what's trending on the Team 980.
All right, what's trending? The Caps open up their season tonight in Buffalo. NHL season opened up last night. The Stanley Cup champion Tampa Bay Lightning beat Chicago 5-1. Wizards Pistons off now Friday night, postponed due to the health and safety protocols, contact tracing issues with COVID-19. Suns Warriors also postponed on Friday. The Wizards, by the way, believe that Russell Westbrook's quad injury is more serious, and he could miss 3 to 4 weeks. College hoops, 18th-ranked Virginia beat Notre Dame 80-68. George Mason beat LaSalle 75-42. GW lost to VCU 84-77. And former Georgetown guard Mac McClung hit a jumper with just under 3 seconds to go to lift 15th-ranked Texas Tech to a 79-77 win over 4th-ranked Texas in Austin last night. Mike Jones, who covers the NFL for USA Today, and as most of you know, covered the Washington football team for many years for the Washington Post. He joins us right now. One of my favorite conversations every time we get to have it. First of all, what was your reaction to the Washington season? You know, a division title, a playoff game, a game Saturday night, Mike, that they had a legitimate chance to win.
Yeah, you know, it definitely exceeded expectations the way they started out the season. And, you know, even before that, I felt like this was going to be a development year they were going to take their lumps and really weren't going to be competitive as they tried to get Ron Rivera, tried to get his system in place and figure out what players he had. And, you know, because not having OTAs or the preseason. And then when he benched Dwayne Haskins talking about, you know, wanting to make a run at the division, I thought it was crazy talk. I thought, okay, you know, you're supposed to be developing this kid here and you're going to go chase a division when you don't really have a shot at chasing a division. So, okay, I was like super wrong on that. Did not envision that the other teams in the division's issues would be even bigger than Washington's were, and that Alex Smith would get back onto the field and bring stability to that offense was really something that I don't think a lot of people outside the building had expected. I know that people in the locker room, when Ron said that, they were like, yeah, let's go. They felt like it was possible. And so hats off to them for pulling that off, the way they finished off the season. And look, they didn't win that game, but they had a kid who had been with the team for like 3 or 4 weeks playing quarterback, and their defense, you know, was good, and they made some plays. They were, you know, within 2 points at one point in the fourth quarter. So I think that this was really as good a first season under Rivera that you could hope for, considering all the stuff that they had swirling around them.
Okay, you know, we have this conversation. We've had this conversation one or two times over the last 10 years. The big picture question is, was this a one-year aberration, which it has been in the past, or do you think this was the beginning of a run of some sustained success?
If Ron Rivera is given the time and the authority to continue to do things his way, which seems like he does have that, then I do think that they can continue to build. They've got to figure out their quarterback situation, you know, and they've got a couple other spots. You know, they need more playmakers on offense. They probably could use a lockdown defensive back to go and complement the strong defensive front that you have. So if you have your secondary with the game-changing talent, they could really use another safety. So they've got some building blocks that they have to add, but they do have a lot of stuff that's in place that should continue to grow. I'm not saying that they're going to contend for the Super Bowl next year, but they should be on track to have a winning season and be in the thick of things for the playoffs.
Big issue, of course, or big question mark in the offseason is quarterback. What do you think they'll do?
I think they'll probably find a veteran that they'll sign. There's going to be a number of guys that'll be on the market, and then they'll probably draft somebody too and develop him behind the veteran. I wouldn't be surprised if Taylor Heinicke is in the mix. You know, I'm not saying he's going to be your starter, but he's definitely a good guy to have for the depth, and you know he can come in and play in a high-pressure situation. So don't let that guy get out of the building. I don't know what's going to happen with Alex Smith. I'd kind of be surprised if he does play again. But, you know, if he decided to retire, it'd be like, hey, that'd be you came back from something devastating. You got this team into the playoffs. You know, phenomenal story. Now, I mean, if he decides he wants to continue playing, that's possible too. But they still got to go out and make sure they have someone to compete for that job. That could possibly help them go to another level.
What do you think the chances realistically are that Houston trades Deshaun Watson?
I don't think it's very good. I know that there has been lots of rumors of his frustrations and wanting to get out of there, but I believe that their new general manager, Nick Castellaro, is going to sit down with him and be like, look, I want to build around you. That's the reason why I came here. That's the only thing they really have that's attractive to coaches, yeah, to general managers. So they can't let him go. He's owed a ton of money. And even though they had stripped down his wide receiver unit, he still led the league in passing. He had one of his best statistical seasons. So I think that they'll figure out a way to ease his concerns and put – they've got to be creative – as they try to upgrade this roster, because they don't have a first or a second, and they don't have a lot of salary cap room because they're over the cap right now. But I think they'll find a way, and I think that he'll still be there.
I mean, I don't think it's crazy at this point to describe Deshaun Watson as an elite quarterback, as certainly no less than top 10 and close to a top 5 guy. You are so lucky to find one of those guys, and it's almost right. Impossible to find them. That's at the core of why I think there's just not much of a chance that Houston would capitulate and move him. I just don't see it.
No, because, I mean, who are you going to get in there? You can't
exactly.
Draft somebody. You know, your first-round pick is going to Miami. There was some talk, oh, they could trade him for Tua, but there's questions about Tua, and you have a slam dunk guy at quarterback now. So I think that they wind up sticking, they smooth things over, they do things to earn his trust and his confidence, and they move on.
I mean, seriously, in thinking about this, because I haven't thought about this in terms of where he is right now. If you take the older guys and take them out of the conversation, and I'm talking about Brady and Breeze in particular, not Rodgers, because to me, Rodgers right. still has, you know, years left. But
yeah,
after Mahomes, Rodgers, you know, and Wilson, who's obvious? I mean, and Josh Allen, and Watson to me is right there with Allen and Wilson.
I agree with you. I completely agree with you. And again, they were in a lot
every
of those
game.
Games, you know,
a lot of them
because of him, you know,
terrible again, defense.
Yeah. And then they had the awful luck with the two fumbles against the Colts.
Indy.
Those are two divisional games. You know, they have a special, special talent there, and he elevates them. They just need to upgrade their offensive line. They need a right guard. and they need another pass rusher to go opposite J.J. Watt if they wind up keeping J.J. Watt. But they've got to upgrade those holes and add another receiver or a tight end, some type of threat, and that will definitely put this team back on track, maybe a little quicker than what we realize, but you can't let Deshaun go because there's not a lot of guys out there like him.
No, there aren't. We're talking to Mike Jones of USA Today. Do you think Detroit, and it's hard to make that, you know, call right now because you don't know who the coach is, but do you think that they will move on from Matt Stafford and trade him?
Again, yeah, just I think you said it. You don't know what you have as far as your head coaching goes, and you don't know what that guy, incoming guy's opinion of Matt Stafford will be. If you're looking at that job, what appeals to you? Okay, you've already got your quarterback in place. You've got a couple of pieces around him. We just need to add this, this, and that. If you get rid of Stafford, then you're signing up for a lengthy rebuilding process, and you don't know if you're going to get all the time that there is to do it the right way because these teams, they lose patience. So I think that they'd be smart to keep Stafford. I'm not saying don't draft somebody to develop behind him, but again, Detroit's not going to be there. There's you know, Lawrence and there's Fields, and then there's a drop off a little bit. They're not going to really have a chance to get one of those two guys. So I think you take your time and find a guy.
What do you think he would bring back in compensation if they did move him?
I don't know if you get a second and a third or something like that. I don't think you get a first-round talent for him, but he's definitely still a talented guy that can win a lot of games for you.
I think that's, by the way, we're talking to Mike Jones. I think that's always one of the conversations we have, whether media members or fans, that sometimes we're just way off on. I mean, first of all, I mean, we would have been way off on some of the deals that Bill O'Brien made in recent years. But, you know, somebody tried to make the case. I had a conversation with somebody last night about what the Washington current quarterback situation contractually, which I just laid out. And I said, what's Stafford worth? And he said, what Alex Smith was worth, you know, the third and Kendall Fuller. And I'm like, really? I think Stafford at 32 would be worth more than that. But again, what do we know? Who's the next GM here?
That's a very good question as well. I mean, I know that, you know, Marty Herney is a guy that's worked with Ron Rivera. Martin Mayhew's a name that has been tossed out there, but it's still early. I have not gotten a sense of a slam dunk name yet. And so it's going to be a little bit of a watch and a wait.
And do you look, a lot of people here are big fans of Kyle Smith and what he's done in the draft here recently, but there appears to be, you know, a pretty strong indication that Ron Rivera is going to bring in a general manager, whether it's one of the two names you mentioned. J.P. Finley reported that they've requested an interview with Ryan Cowden, who's in Tennessee, but worked with Rivera in Carolina. Do you have any sense of why Kyle Smith and Ron Rivera, that why Kyle Smith won't be the next general manager here?
I don't. I've asked around. I don't know if Ron wants somebody with more experience or anything like that, but I've been trying to find out, and people think highly of him, but no indication yet. And unfortunately, Kevin, I got to run. I got another 8 o'clock that's hitting me right now.
Oh, you do? Okay, I was just going to ask you real quickly, who's Philadelphia going to hire?
That's a really good question as well, because they've got a mess. They've got a guy that won a Super Bowl, and then he just booted him out because the owner wants to control things. It's going to be interesting to see who they bring in that is going to want to sign up for such uncertainty.
All right, go. I know you're busy, especially this week with all the four playoff games. It's great to catch up. I'll talk to you soon. Mike Jones, everybody. When we come back, Mike Wilbon's going to join us in about 20 minutes. A lot of you tweeted me about the Alex Smith contract. I'll just tell you what I was told, and I'm going to go look up the spot rack numbers, but the $8 million in cap savings, some of you are saying, is much more than that, which, of course, would just add to the thought that he's not going to be back on this roster. I hope everybody's okay with that. I think the organization has done a lot for him, and he's done a lot for it as well. Kevin Sheehan Show, Team 980, Team980.com.
Download the Radio.com app and favorite the Team 980 to listen anytime, anywhere.